Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hi, I'm Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer, and we're talking politics, which the Brian Lehrer Show is doing every day, usually in this spot. Today we meet the candidates running for the U.S. House of Representatives in Brooklyn's 10th Congressional District. The race, if nothing else, is kind of interesting because it's not every day that the challenger advises the incumbent to Google the challenger's poem, which explains why the challenger abused people as an adult and that he was abused as a child. Today, right now, we have the incumbent congressman, Adolphus Towns, who has served the 10th District of New York. How many terms are you in, Mr. Congressman?
I'm 14 terms, running for my 15th term.
And so in this last most recent term, what have been your biggest accomplishments?
Well, you know, I think that we've been able to look at the situation, you know, AIG. We feel that, you know, we've been able to sort of turn that around and be able to expose, you know, certain things that are going on there. We've been able to look very seriously at this whole Toyota recall and to make certain that Toyota cars are safe. I mean, we feel basically our oversight has been around safety issues, and we're concerned we're now looking at MMS and, of course, which had the responsibility to oversee the BP situation. So we've been making certain that people are safe. We've looked at the recall, you know, that took place with Johnson & Johnson. These are the things that we've been involved in. We want to make certain that products are safe. We want to make certain that people that use them, that they are safe. So that's the thing we've been focusing on.
And this is as part of your role in the Government Oversight Committee, yes?
That's correct. The Oversight Committee has...
Of that whole list of things or any others, if you could pick one that's been where you've been the driving force behind or that's your signature issue, what would that one issue be?
Well, I think that the student athletes' right to know bill has been, you know, something that has helped people so much. And that was my idea, you know, right from the beginning. And, of course, we pushed it and finally we were able to get it through because that has helped so many young people, especially these athletes who've gone into situations wherein they did not know that they were signing up with a school that did not graduate their athletes. And we've been able to sort of highlight that. There was one school for a period of 10 years did not graduate one basketball player. And we wanted to let people, you know this. And if they want to go to a school that does not graduate athletes, because in the body of the letter, they have to put the graduation rate. If it's 5%, 10%, 50%, so that at least the school and the guidance counselors and the parents will know exactly what to expect. If you get a letter and it says, we're delighted to give you a scholarship, but only 5% of the students to come here get a degree. Well, if you want to take your chance, fine. But at least you know, because in the past that this information was not available. So now through this legislation, it is available. People know about it and that they can make a very informed decision as to whether they would like for their son or their daughter to be put into that kind of situation.
That certainly seems good for those specific athletes. But you know, how many people overall is this going to help? How many people in your district are Division I athletes or any division athletes?
Well, you'd be surprised.
Huh.
That's the biggest thing right now with scholarships coming from the 10th Congressional District. There are tremendous athletes that come out of here. And not only that, you know, we're now seeing that many of them are getting degrees as a result of my legislation. And I think that's the key. Because if you take a youngster and you use his skills for 4 years and then they have no degree, they come back to the community, they're frustrated. They have problems. But now with the new rules, you found that the athletic programs have revamped. They now have guidance counselors. They now have tutors. And they have all these things to be able to help these young people. So you'd be amazed as to how many it actually helps.
Let's shift for a second to international affairs. What is your position on U.S. forces in Afghanistan? Because I know you did vote against funding recently.
Yeah, I did. I voted against the funding, and I haven't since that time I visited Afghanistan. You know, I'm not one that would just do something. I put myself totally into situations where I can have information. So after I voted, and there was some criticism about my vote of not funding, so I went. And I had an opportunity to visit with the troops, talk to Petraeus. I had an opportunity to look at all the things that were going on, talk to contractors. I talked to everybody that would let me talk to them. And after coming back, I must admit that I was hoping now to be able to talk to the president, because my views on it now have somewhat changed. I mean, the point is that I'm still looking and researching to see in terms of exactly where I want to come down. But I think the visit helped me a great deal to be able to understand some things that maybe I was, you know, not aware of.
So would you have voted, if the vote were tomorrow, might you vote differently?
I think I would probably vote the same way at this point in time. You know, I think that I need to have a conversation with the Secretary of State and with the President before I can tell you that my vote would actually change.
How much, given the financial situation of people across the country and especially in your district, what about the cost of the war? How can you justify that to constituents who say we shouldn't be spending money there, we should be spending it here?
Well, you know, in terms of the cost of the war, I definitely, you know, have some concerns about that. You know, but here again, sometimes when you're in a situation, you just can't pick up and walk away from it, you know, because of a lot of things that are going on. But, you know, I am very concerned about the fact that I really feel that the money that's going into the war takes away from education. It takes away from a lot of other things that we need to focus on. And that is a concern. But at the same time, we have to look at where we are. And to me, we have no business going to Afghanistan, but now that we're there, you know, we have to sort of weigh as to how we come out.
What is the price tag for the war in Afghanistan? What's it going to be a year?
Well, you know, I'm not sure what the numbers are now, because with the surge, that the numbers are definitely going to go up, and with the increasing in terms of the amount of young people that they're pulling into it. So I'm not sure what the number is at this time.
Could you give a ballpark within a few billion? Is it 1 billion? Will it be 5 billion? Will it be 10 billion a year?
Well, I really don't know the exact number at this point once the surge goes on. But what I'm saying to you is that it's too much. You know, and I'm a guy that I believe in peace. You know, I think that you negotiate as long as you can negotiate, and that you should. And, of course, there's no question in my mind that we're spending money in Afghanistan that should go into education, you know, in this nation. I know we need to be in a position to compete, and that the only way we can compete is to make certain that our educational system is strong and that it's doing the kind of things that we know that it needs to do. And I must say, though, I know there's some things in education that need to happen. I think that corporate America and the educators need to sit down and sort of take a look at where we are and what's really needed. I think there's a gap between corporate America and our educational structure, and I really feel that discussion should take place, and it should take place at a very high level, either the Secretary of Education or the President of the United States, because there is a gap. And of course, I don't want to go into it in this discussion, but, you know, I've been talking about it over and over throughout this campaign, that some changes must be made.
Well, for the record, we'll just say that estimates of U.S. spending through 2015, according to NATO, is going to be $6 billion, as you say. It's not necessarily written in stone. I want to ask you about your challenger, mm-hmm. Kevin Powell. Kevin Powell complains that you say, quote, "I don't know Kevin Powell." And Kevin Powell says, "You should know Kevin Powell, because Kevin Powell's lived in your district many years. He's been an activist. He's personally worked with your daughter. So what do you know about Kevin Powell?"
Well, he says he worked with my daughter. My daughter doesn't know him about this working with her. You know, I mean, I have heard him. He keeps saying this. You know, I don't know whether that's supposed to be a personal kind of slap or what. I have no idea. You know, but about how he's worked with her, I don't know him. I really don't. And so, therefore, I've heard a lot about him through the media and people talking to me and people coming to our town hall meetings, which I've never seen him, you know, and I've had over the last year, there was 24, and I don't recall him ever showing up to one.
He's run against you a few times.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think he's playing the best 2 out of 3.
Well, let me give you one. I want to give you a quote that Kevin Powell wrote, and he writes a lot. He said, "In fact, Mr. Towns, I am your son, as are all the black males of the 10th Congressional District." What do you think about that?
My son.
I think he was speaking metaphorically, but what do you think about saying that all your constituents, the young black males, are essentially your son?
Yeah, I think that all of them are, and I hope I'm a role model, and I want to be a person that can set an example and encourage them to follow. I mean, that's the kind of life that I hope to be able to live and the legacy that I want to leave. I want them to be able to look at me and what I've done and to be able to follow it, you know, and without doing a whole lot of apologizing. I think that's the difference.
Adolphus Towns, U.S. Congressman representing the 10th Congressional District in New York. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
Joining me now is Kevin Powell, who's running for that seat, or at least the Democratic nomination thereof, which will eventually, whoever wins the Democratic nomination, will probably win the election. Hello, Kevin. Hi, Kevin. Is your radio on? Can you hear me? If it's on,
yes.
You need to shut it. All right. How are you doing? I don't know if you heard Congressman talking about that "I am your son" quote, but what do you think? If you did, what do you think of any of his answers?
Well, first of all, sir, thank you very much for this opportunity. And again, as someone who believes deeply in democracy, I think it's a tragedy that in two different elections that I've only run twice, just for the record, in 2008 and 2010, that the congressman doesn't believe enough in democracy that he would even have a direct debate with me. You know, it's always him going on and I'm going on a program. So first and foremost, I think a lot of the responses have nothing to do with the 10th Congressional District, the things that he said. To talk about student athletes, as many people are losing their homes in the 10th Congressional District, I encounter them every single day from Flatlands, Canarsie, Bed-Stuy, to deal with the fact that we have incredible unemployment in this district. People literally need jobs. Small businesses are shutting. The fact that there are tons of homeless people who actually come into my campaign office at Bedford and DeKalb who say, we reached out to the congressperson's office. We got no response. We got the runaround. We've had people saying they were looking for help with health care, et cetera. And so I think what we have, sir, is a classic example in 27 years of his leadership, of lazy leadership and dishonest leadership that does not represent the people of Brooklyn, of New York City, of this country, of this great nation.
If you were the congressman, would you just offer better constituent services? Would you take different votes? Would you support different legislation than Congressman Towns has supported?
Well, sir, actually, I would do what I've been doing as a candidate. My campaign office is actually a community empowerment center. People know they can come to 527 DeKalb Avenue between Bedford and Skillman and get information about GD programs, about home foreclosures, about programs for scholarships for their young people to go to college. We already are doing the work of a congressperson. We're not paid for this. We don't have 20 to 25 staffers paid. We don't have two offices in New York City, and we don't have an office in Washington, D.C. Again, he represents lazy leadership. If you're an elected official who is being paid by taxpayers to do your job, you should be a bridge for resources and information for the American people. Mr. Towns has not been doing that. When I get to a Congress, I will be doing that. And in addition to that, I'll be fighting in my first 2 years to make sure we get money back to the district, earmarks for job creation, for green jobs, and making sure that people have an opportunity for affordable housing and quality public school education. That's what you should be doing as a congressperson, and particularly during this great recession that is devastating my district.
Congressman Towns didn't level the charge, but it's almost impossible to talk to his advisor, Hank Shinecoff, and sometimes spokesman, without hearing him call you a woman abuser. And this is something that you've talked about and written about. So could you, for the record, talk about that charge and your past with the issue of women abuse?
First of all, sir, I am 44 years old, and the stuff that we're talking about, no one in America would know about it if I hadn't talked about it myself back in the late 80s, early 1990s when I was a young man in college. I actually wrote a piece in Essence magazine in September 92 called The Sexist in Me. Then in 2000, in Ms. magazine, I wrote a piece called Confessions of Recovering Misogynist. On top of that, over the past 18 years, there have been very few people, not just in New York City, I'm talking about men, but people across the country other than Michael Kimmel, Jackson Katz, Byron Hurd, and myself, who've been outspoken about violence prevention against girls and women in this country. In fact, I'm a part of a coalition right now called the Coalition for Redefining Manhood, where we believe that manhood should be rooted in nonviolence, peace, and love. The irony of Mr. Shinecoff saying this stuff is that in 2008, he actually wanted to be my consultant and asked if he could work with my campaign because he talked about how much he, quote, despised Ed Towns. Number two, Mr. Towns, as a congressperson, has been invited to many of the anti-domestic violence workshops and seminars in our district, has never responded to one, has never showed up to one. In fact, We've also done several workshops for men and boys in the district. So it's hypocritical for them to use the honesty that I put out there for the past 20 years, sir, to try to say that I'm somehow some sort of disrespect of women. That's actually contrary to the truth. If you look at my new book, my 10th book, Open Letters to America, there's an essay in there called Open Letter to an American Woman that's a response to a woman who saw me when I appeared on the Oprah Winfrey Show. Why would Oprah have me on her show in 2009 if I didn't have a track record of being a man who has redeemed his life from a life of violence to a life of nonviolence in a way that I can not only help other people in our community but also be an advocate against violence against women and girls? So that's absolutely absurd for them to say something like that.
Errol Lewis, a columnist for the Daily News, so it's not just Ed Towns who's talking about this. He sort of took the measure of your candidacy, your life as a public figure. He praised your activism. He praised your organizational works. But eventually, Lewis concluded that violent personal conduct makes an otherwise attractive Paul completely unfit for office. You, I take it, would disagree.
Absolutely, sir. I live a life of nonviolence, peace, and love. That's who I am at this point. If I was that kind of person, sir, why do I get invited to 200 colleges, universities, and corporations around the country? Why do I do consistent anti-violence work in the prison system in this country and grade schools and high schools all across this country? Why is it that I've been been celebrated by people like Gloria Steinem, the mother of the feminist movement? I mean, we can go on and on and on. In fact, what I've been able to do as a product of a single-parent household, grew up on welfare and food stamps and government cheese and the kind of poverty and violence I wouldn't wish on anyone, is not only turned my life around, but because I am a person who's now about nonviolence, I've been able to go into the communities of the 10th Congressional District, East New York, Bed-Stuy, the communities that haven't seen Ed Towns in 27 years, and do the work that he hasn't done to reach those young men that all he can say to them is they need to pull their pants up. I actually can speak to them directly because I come from the same background as them and say, you know what, that's not the lifestyle you want. The lifestyle you want has got to be about responsibility, it's got to be about education, it's got to be about something that makes something out of your life. And so I respectfully disagree with that. And you also have to understand, sir, that Errol Lewis from the Daily News is actually close friends with Mr. Towns' daughter-in-law, Karen Towns, who's actually the head of the Brooklyn chapter NAACP. So all these folks are actually in bed together. That's what's going on here. What we have in Brooklyn is what I call a ghetto monarchy, where they're basically trying to hold on to their power for a handful of people at the expense of the masses of people in the 10th District from Borough Hill and Fort Greene, where I live, all the way out to East New York. That's the real issue. What is the matter with the leadership that we have that has been lazy and dishonest and disrespectful to the American people?
I know you stand by all your works, your 10 books. You blog extensively for the Huffington Post. Would you, though, concede that in terms of running for public office, your honesty over the years, I mean, you yourself said people wouldn't know about your past history with abusive women if you didn't write about that. I mean, I'm not sure that's true. You're a semi-public figure on the real world, and you were dismissed from Rutgers for threatening a woman with a knife, it's been reported. So maybe someone would have done digging. But would you at least concede that your extensive record has been used against you in this race so far?
I would say to you is that what we need in the 21st century are public servants, are leaders who are transparent and honest. I mean, let's think about it for a second. Over the last 15 years, we had the dishonesty of Bill Clinton in the White House. We've had the dishonesty of Jesse Jackson. We've had the dishonesty of Elliot Spitzer. We can go on and on and on. And I admire those people in different ways. But what I'm saying to you, when I look at the folks who have really done great works in their lives, you have to be transparent and honest. I'm running against someone who's completely dishonest. He took a $1,300 bribe when he was running for office in 1982. This is someone who, in the midst of the foreclosure crisis in Brooklyn, New York, got two VIP loans from Countrywide, as was reported in 2009. And this year, he tried to send $500,000 first and then another $5 million in taxpayer dollars to a bogus nonprofit which had an abandoned building as his address, which was reported in the Daily News. So I would rather be an honest congressional leader as opposed to a dishonest one who has represented lazy leadership for 27 years.
Last question. If elected, would you be a member of the Congressional Black Caucus? Would you welcome that?
I would be a member of this Congressional Black Caucus, but I'd also be a member of the Progressive Caucus in the United States Congress, because I'm a progressive. I'm a true progressive. It's not just about voting right on the issues, as other Democrats have done. Mr. Towns has voted right on most issues, but it's about being a loud voice. You're in the right station, but your voice needs to be loud. Brooklyn is America. It's the most diverse community in this country, and we need someone who's going to actually be a voice for all the people in this community, be they black, Jewish, Italian, Russian, Chinese, Puerto Rican. I want to represent all those types of people.
Kevin Powell, candidate for Congress in New York's 10th Congressional District. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
And coming up, we'll speak with Harry Shearer, a man who has his hands in everything, and now he has his hands in an interesting new documentary about the failures of civil engineering that led to the disaster in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. Please stick around.